Wildly uneven and unfair, that's how the UN describes the distribution of COVID vaccines around the world. As rich nations scramble to buy up as much of the supply, many places are left
out
entirely.
The COVAX pillar aims to ensure that every country gets fair and equitable access to eventual COVID-19 vaccines.
More than 150 nations, representing nearly two-thirds of the world's population, have committed to receiving COVID-19 vaccines through COVAX.
The COVAX pillar is founded on the principle of equitable access. This means any country, regardless of their ability to pay, has the same access to vaccines.
Now, the initiative set up by the World Health Organization aims to ensure 2 billion doses of safe, effective and affordable COVID-19 vaccines by 2021.
It's always been true that how you define a problem will shape the solution. And the definition of the problem of vaccine distribution during an unprecedented global pandemic cannot be any more important. From a human rights perspective, the global vaccine distribution problem would, for example, mean that we try to get the COVID vaccine to communities and peoples in developing countries quickly, safely, at low or no cost, without political, class, or gender discrimination. It would lead towards a solution that combines a World Trade Organization waiver on intellectual property rights for COVID-related products and processes. Maybe a General Assembly declaration that health is a global public good. A multilateral global humanitarian relief fund underwritten by developed country governments. And an international distribution system directed by the World Health Assembly. But that is not the vision that has prevailed. Instead, what we have is COVAX, a multi-stakeholder group which represents the vision and goals of a World Economic Forum or a Gates Foundation perspective. Their aim is to get the COVID vaccine to communities and peoples in the developing world without disrupting the global pharmaceutical market, with a mechanism that circumvents long-standing multilateral humanitarian relief systems while steering the vaccines to preferred allies in the developing world. Welcome. You're listening to the State of Power podcast from the Transnational Institute. I am your host, Sean Marchesa. Today on the podcast, we're taking a closer look at COVAX, the program that's been touted as the solution to the global vaccine distribution problem. My guest on the podcast today argues that COVAX is actually a mechanism through which corporate interests have hijacked UN processes and used them to safeguard their profits with little regard to the attendant social costs. Harris Gleckman is a sociologist who spent much of his career at the United Nations and has a detailed understanding of corporate global governance across multiple issues. His work at the United Nations and his ongoing research with the University of Boston in Massachusetts and also with the Brussels-based Foundation for Global Governance and Sustainability gives him deep insight into how the United Nations might be restructured to better handle bigger crises in the health, environment, and social areas. I began by asking Harris to explain what exactly COVAX is.
COVAX is a multi-stakeholder body, which means it's not part of the United Nations. It brings together, in as other multi-stakeholder bodies, corporate interests, some academics, some civil society, some friendly governments, to take on a global issue and move it outside the UN system, but with a connection to the UN system in many cases. And at the same time, have it the central part not to be governments, but to be corporations. Mm-hmm. So COVAX is technically is not only a multi-stakeholder body, but was the two leading bodies that formed it are also multi-stakeholder bodies. Uh-huh. One is Gavi, the Vaccine Initiative, a Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation-driven effort to do really fantastic work with vaccine for a range of other public health issues around the world. Mm-hmm. And the other one is a less well-known organization called the CEPI, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovation, also one involving the Gates Foundation, the World Economic Forum, and two different governments, and also the UN. And the third and clearly junior partner in the leadership is the World Health Organization. So you have this two multi-stakeholder groups bring their resources together to create COVAX and bring on the World Health Organization as a public face, in part to enhance the apparent legitimacy of the whole effort.
So this isn't something that was created by the United Nations, say, under the leadership of the World Health Organization, and then they had businesses come in to help. No, this was actually set up by these multi-stakeholder bodies that have a lot of corporations in them. And then they came to the World Health Organization to say, can we work together to provide vaccines?
Yes, that's correct, Sean. One way that you can see that is in the public documents for COVAX. They describe a very complicated governance mechanism inside. Mm-hmm. But the core lead body is a COVAX Council. COVAX Council has two chairs, one chair from the Gavi, the Vaccine Initiative, and one chair from CEPI. Whoops, where did the WHO go? They're a junior partner in the leadership.
So they're not even in the lead council that's making the big decisions.
They are in the council, but they're not the part of the chairing.
Wow. Okay.
And that kind of asymmetric power between the World Health Organization's involvement in COVAX and these two other corporate-led multi-stakeholder groups permeates the rest of the structure of mm-hmm. COVAX.
So right from the just this basic description, what we see is that the World Health Organization is sort of a junior partner, as you put it, and you've got other players that are in the lead. Is this a good thing? What are these players there to do, how are they going about it?
We don't understand the primary concerns of the other players. I think you need to think about one very unusual feature of the vaccine initiative. Mm-hmm. It is the first and the only one I can think of product or service for which within a near time frame, every person in the globe is a candidate to buy it or to get it. Mm-hmm. And immediately this opens up the whole question of the drivers for the world pharmaceutical market. This is a big, new, expansive space. Mm-hmm. Now, the founding groups realize well that there are serious cracks, serious failures in Big Pharma. Mm-hmm. And they constructed COVAX to try to fill some of those cracks. They at least recognize that the Big Pharma's effort for higher prices in wealthier countries is going to mean political turmoil in countries who cannot become customers mm-hmm. because of their financial realities.
Just because they can't afford to compete in that market.
As customers.
Yeah.
So it's not only that the governments are in difficulties in developing countries, particularly now that we have economic and social disruptions because of COVID, that the countries have to respond to. The bigger driver for Big Pharma is to find customers who are willing to pay the highest price possible for their products which they are selling. So COVAX was put there to say, can we fix some of these really, really big failures of the world pharmaceutical market and fix those failures to preserve essential aspects of a selling market. One major element of this, Sean, that you were raising is that COVAX and its supporting organizations say that they're helping to provide the vaccine to developing countries, particularly the 92 least developed countries or poorest countries by the World Bank standards. What they're really not saying in that language is that they too are selling the vaccine to these countries, but at a discount.
So this isn't like we're making the vaccine free and available to everyone. Is that we're mitigating sort of the expensive prices that would have been charged if the global pharmaceutical industry was to be allowed to just charge what they want, but we're still going to charge you something. And that's something that's supposed to keep the global market sort of still viable.
That's correct. So what you have, if you can imagine for a moment being in a government of even a medium-sized country who are trying to find vaccines on the world market for their country's population. They can go to the handful of Western companies and negotiate directly. And that means that the pressure is on for the highest price, whether they're going to be delivered on time, the quality checks, or if they can go to some other body like COVAX who may offer them a discount. The difficulty is that they're telling, COVAX is telling the world or implying to the world that they're donating, they're facilitating the donations.
That's all over the news, right? This is already surprising for me because all over the news, it's like, well, the United Nations is trying to make vaccines available to everyone. And the way they are doing this is through COVAX, which is donating vaccines to everyone. So there's some missing information there in that framing.
That's correct. And a lot of this is very carefully played on words. COVAX is making available vaccines. Well, yes, as is Big Pharma making available vaccines. Is what do you have to do to actually get them? Now, there's a number of other tension points that COVAX and the pharmaceutical industry are engaged in. In one of which is that the pharmaceutical industry and now COVAX is increasingly insisting on liability waivers as part of the purchase agreements. So you don't actually aren't getting the high science, the high safety, the high protection that's available in northern countries. I want to raise another issue.
So this is essentially, they're saying if the vaccine doesn't work or if it has some complications, you can't really sue, or I don't get what a liability waiver is.
It is, as with any pharmaceutical product, it may contain contaminants. It may not deliver what was expected of it in its claims. And in the case of the most of the vaccines, it has to be kept at a cold temperature. So what they are saying is that the governments should absorb any potential liability that individuals in the country who receive the injections, but failed injections, could only sue the government and cannot sue COVAX or
supplier,
pharmaceutical industry.
Wow.
So what's happening here is it's a battle for the space and of how this product is going to fit into a geopolitical and a market orientation toward the South. And what are the ways in which that's happening? To return a bit to the imagining you are the purchasing person for a governmental is you also have vaccines available from the Chinese. You have vaccines available from Russia. Mm-hmm. You have some vaccines available from India, who has the largest vaccine manufacturing facility in the South. Mm-hmm. And so you're forced into this competitive effort to provide a necessary public health requirement for dealing with COVID to your population.
Mm-hmm. So countries are forced to kind of join COVAX. The Indian, Russian, and Chinese vaccines are not part of this system.
That is correct.
Uh-huh. So they're not competing in that same space.
They are competitors to COVAX and the big pharma, Western big pharma.
Yeah.
What keeps getting lost, Sean, is that the objective is to recognize we have a global public health crisis, mm-hmm. that health ought to be a global good, and that the primary task is to get that global good available to people as fast and as effectively as possible.
That would be the expectation, right?
Yes, but now you create all these humps, all these obstacles, and all these barriers to meeting that global public good. COVAX, to take another odd bit of its choice, mm-hmm. while it is saying that it's providing the vaccine for developing countries as much as through its network, their formal documents say they're only looking to provide the vaccine to 20% of the population.
20% of the global population?
Of the population in the 92 countries that they're working with.
But this is nothing, that does nothing for herd immunity, that does, why the number 20%?
They provide no explanation in their documents. There are two possibilities that we have to consider. One is that they say that that's their average estimate of the number of healthcare workers and elderly people.
Okay.
But those number, that doesn't, there's no real global average for that kind of number.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is that this might be a polite way of saying that they're focusing their vaccine actions to build and preserve the national elites in developing countries, which are not more than 20% of the population.
Wow. So it's not the most vulnerable. It's possible. There's two possibilities. They're trying to protect the most vulnerable or the wealthiest.
I think that what this is raising, Sean, is that there's a whole bunch of presumptions about how a global market is working when faced with a global health crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And the tensions of that is what COVAX sought to try to solve, but it has failed.
Mm-hmm.
Because those tensions are much bigger than the fix that even COVAX came up with.
Yeah. Their attempt to mitigate how the market would normally work has only made it a little more obscene, in my opinion, because it hasn't solved the fundamental issue of how do we get the vaccine to a rural community somewhere in Cambodia, somewhere in Kenya, and make sure that it's at an equal level of access as everybody else. That's not what it's doing, but it seems we're being sold that that's what it's doing.
That's correct, Sean. And another example from their complex governance system,
mm-hmm.
is that they realize that in their effort to devise a partial fix, that mm-hmm. they will only have access to a certain number of vaccines at any given time, and that certain countries will only be able to pay for their share of the vaccine. So they set up a two-level internal committee to decide which countries will get vaccines in what order. So it's not only just the 20% criteria, they've taken it upon themselves to say, with their limited vaccines that they managed to buy from Big Pharma, they get to decide which countries they will supply them to, which countries will become customers for COVAX.
And what are the do they explain the criteria for determining these countries, or is it essentially who can afford best or who needs it?
The World Health Organization has an expert body who tries to figure out how to prioritize such issues. So they are providing input, but only input, to COVAX. COVAX actually has a two-tiered system for making this decision. They have a body who is to formulate which countries are to get what quantities and on what timetable. And they present this to another body, which is even more restricted membership and led by the two key multi-stakeholder founders, who can come back and say, did you really think about these things well? And we want more evidence why you picked these countries and these times and these prices.
Yeah.
So it set itself up as a global decision-making body as to who can get the vaccine down to the country level.
Wow. And this is not even a United Nations system. This is for me, I think, really the core of the understanding of what COVAX is, the fact that we are sold because the United Nations is somehow involved, it comes across as a United Nations initiative. And thus people trust that the United Nations has systems, checks and balances that ensure that everything is fair and everything is done according to kind of the best practice for international cooperation. But instead, what you're seeing is indeed that these companies are taking the lead and creating all these complex systems that are not serving what we expect them to serve. What are some of the more core problems with COVAX?
There's a couple of ones, Sean.
Yeah.
But let me stay a little bit with the governance and its financing.
Yes.
So in this push to say COVAX is the only body that can fix some of the problems created by Big Pharma, they have successfully convinced the developed country governments to provide their donations to COVAX, rather than providing them to a WHO trust fund or to a UN humanitarian trust fund. So as of last December, about 80% of the resources that COVAX had came from governments. So the governments have opted to work with COVAX and give them the money rather than to give it to a part of the UN, which has the potential of a more democratic decision-making about what to do with limited resources, what to do with higher risk populations and areas of global spikes and crises.
Wow. So governments, if I get this right, governments have raised, this is both wealthy and not so wealthy governments, right?
These are the wealthier governments.
The wealthier governments.
Who are the ones who tend to provide emergency assistance for countries in various forms of crises. Instead of providing it through the UN structures or options, they've opted to give their money to COVAX.
Wow.
Now, what this also does in terms of public democracy is that decision-making about where those resources go, as I was indicating, now become internal to COVAX and not publicly disclosed. So the minutes of the meetings where deciding this country will get this at this price on this schedule, but these won't, These don't fall under public records. These are not made available.
If it were part of their discretion, they decide, and we can only guess how they're reaching these decisions.
Amongst those things which we are guessing, those of us who are researching and are concerned about this, is we're unable so far to determine what actually is the discount that COVAX is offering.
Oh.
Our impression is that the discount will vary by each individual country.
Uh-huh.
And again, this is a political leverage term arrangement, so that they can decide countries which are more sympathetic to the West, more sympathetic to Big Pharma, or countries which they want to pull away from, in geopolitical terms, the Russia or China, they may offer larger discounts. It has turned, the distribution of the vaccine has been turned into a geopolitical battleground.
Wow.
And is therefore, increasingly, it doesn't make sense to consider COVAX a health body. Rather, it makes more sense to see them as some mixture of a merchant bank who is involved in financing various sets of relations. And sometimes it's worth seeing them as part of a new geopolitical lever between of the North to the South, in a similar manner that the North may sell weapons to certain countries at certain prices and certain conditions. There's now vaccine prices, conditions, delivery times, all effectively out of public disclosure space.
Wow. So it's a bank because it's pulling all these resources from the countries that normally provide humanitarian relief and all of that, and all the money is somehow now under their control. They decide who's going to, how they're going to pay for the vaccine for whose benefit. And at the same time, it's now being used to bring other countries closer. So we can essentially assume Iran is not going to get as much help as, say, Japan.
Yeah, Iran is not going to get much help from this arrangement. So there's in terms of it being a bank, a merchant bank, which is one of the arguments in the paper that the Friends of the Earth International and TNI has published on this subject. The merchant banking has two other components. One is that they are trying to build their financial resource base by approaching middle-income countries who are having difficulty with timely delivery, timely arrangements for getting the vaccine tested and checked, and inviting them to pay COVAX to negotiate on their behalf. This increases the size of the pot of money that COVAX has to manage and can use for its negotiation with Big Pharma.
With the Big Pharma companies.
To get from the companies to get the vaccine.
Uh-huh.
The second aspect of why it's more appropriate to call COVAX a merchant bank is that they seek to design and influence how new vaccines will be discovered, how new vaccines will be tested, how new vaccines will be approved, where new manufacturing facilities should be put up, and how to restructure the distribution structure for vaccines. That's a classic role that a merchant bank in some sectors has, is it uses its financial base to influence pre-financing activities, the manufacturing, the science, and the development, and the post-financing distribution channels, and they use it to influence its structure. And a good deal of the other parts of the COVAX governance system address both sides of this pre-buying, pre-financing and post-financing markets for vaccines.
And this bypasses any checks and balances that had already been created to protect against that type of influence.
That's correct. So that's, and that one of the important things that I hope you're able to convey is that COVAX presents itself as a health care body. Mm-hmm. COVAX is probably better described as either a merchant bank in the health business, mm-hmm. a part of the geopolitical battles of involving the West, the Chinese, and the Russian governments in the developing world, and partly a group to protect the concept that everything has to go through a market. Everything must be sold, even for urgent global needs.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go, like to say, well, I've seen the decision making from the donor countries, for instance, the ones that are deciding to put money with COVAX. But can you explain a little more why the developing countries, the less wealthy countries, are not simply bypassing all of this and going to Russia, to China? Is it because the vaccines are not as readily available as one may believe, or the prices are not so competitive? Why don't they move away from the COVAX system and instead maybe go with the other parties?
That is a set of difficult choices for government officials in developing countries, particularly the 92 countries under the COVAX program, is to decide which way they're going to obtain vaccines for their population and which way they're going to try to protect them from the effect of COVID. Mm-hmm. There are multiple routes forward. Amongst them is to force that the intellectual property rights related to vaccine and vaccine development should be put outside the intellectual property regime because it's a global crisis. They're seeking a WTO trade waiver. So each country has to figure out for itself in this crisis environment where they're going to go to get vaccines or open policy and market and financing doors to meet the domestic needs for addressing their crisis. Mm-hmm. This is made more difficult because the West is engaging in vaccine nationalism. Mm-hmm.
That's what we've been seeing, right? With Canada getting doses that are like multiple times its own population, as reported in some quarters, a lot of countries overbuying, if there's such a term, hoarding the vaccine, essentially.
Sean, we should make a distinction here, which is that in some cases, the overbuying are agreements to buy vaccines which have yet to be produced. They will be produced in 6 to 12 months. Uh-huh. So some countries, including countries in the South, are forced into making long-term purchase agreements for products which don't now exist in order to make sure that they get something in 6 to 9 months.
Yeah.
That's a little bit different. And that's the terrible reality of those officials in developing countries who are trying to address their health needs, that they're forced into that game.
Yeah.
That's different than vaccine nationalism, which is where a good number of the developed countries and now India and China and Russia are saying the first people, the primary people, the core group who are going to get vaccinated before we export significant quantities are our domestic citizens.
Uh-huh.
To return to why this is a non-viable way of addressing a global crisis. The virus doesn't know borders.
The vaccine is still moving.
Still freely. Moves around. The borders don't make sense in terms of the vaccine, the virus.
So one country could have all its people vaccinated, but it wouldn't really change much.
And that's correct. And because you need to get a global so-called herd immunity to defeat this virus. No one country can get rid of the virus.
Right, so.
You need to get rid of it as a globe.
And the only way to do that is to ensure that everyone has access in the same way.
To be fair, we would get to this so-called herd immunity when something around 60 to 80% of the world, their bodies are able to protect themselves against the virus. Mm-hmm. So even COVAX's effort to do their fix is only looking at 20%. It doesn't make sense. It fails.
What could be the alternatives? Because you've mentioned right now the issue of intellectual property. Why is it that we just don't have everybody getting the recipe and it's like, here's the recipe, take care of your people, make vaccines. If you can't afford to make them, you gain capacity to produce your own vaccine. This intellectual property conversation has come up multiple times. Can you break it down for someone who doesn't quite understand why this is the case?
There's a number of efforts to say that the number one legal regime in the world should be a human rights-based regime, mm-hmm. and that the principles of around the human rights regime should take precedence over the trade rules, over other economic rules, over everything else. And what we're seeing through how the world and Big Pharma and COVAX are behaving is they're saying, no, that is not acceptable to us. Mm-hmm. We want to keep the trade rules. We want to keep the market rules. We want to keep the financing rules as higher than human rights standards. Mm-hmm. And what is being pushed in a number of areas by governments is in the South and civil society groups around the world is to try to open up cracks in this, that the normal business practice should take dominant precedence over human rights. They're going to the World Trade Organization and saying, given the severity of what's happening, suspend your market rules on intellectual property. Mm-hmm. In the context of the current mega disaster on health, put human rights issues on top of the trade rule system, at least for a while. Mm-hmm. Similar efforts are being made by others who are going to various developed countries, and they're saying, can you provide extra budgetary support beyond the normal development aid? Mm-hmm. Because our economies and our health and our hunger levels have moved up beyond what is the market normal, let's call it mm-hmm. that. And because
of extraordinary circumstances.
That's right. And we have to do extraordinary efforts to put human rights above market practices, market rules, trade rules, finance rules, for a crisis of this magnitude. Mm-hmm.
So really the alternative is it cannot be business as usual. We need to put human life first and not the viability of these global corporations that produce the vaccine. With, as has been pointed out multiple times, that many of these companies claim, well, we did the research and development, but a lot of it is done using public money also.
Absolutely correct, Sean.
It boggles the mind for me how we can, I mean, even now we're talking about this, the number of people that have died, the continuing suffering that we're seeing with COVID wreaking havoc all over the world, that we can still be in this conversation where it's like, well, we own the intellectual property, businesses have to make a profit. It's the absolute the cynicism behind it, the callousness almost. I find it difficult to understand. I don't know how people that are listening here are going to actually understand it as well. It's just difficult for me to put my head around it. But there are people sitting in a room and saying, well, we can't give this for free. If they're not able to pay, they're going to die.
Sean, I think you're quite right. It is daunting to realize what is actually happening around us with the pain and the levels of pain and family loss. And you hear that that can't be addressed because I cannot get my royalties at the same rate that I wanted before.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the important things of public education at the moment is to recognize that we have to be clear about how we would envision a better world and why these market practices result in turning health into a business. Mm-hmm. And why, even in crisis times, part of the business world realizes that the normal practices need to be fixed and they still can't fix them.
Yeah. They instead come around with these half measures.
That's right. They want to tell us we can fix these problems. But as I think you have brought out in the interview, what they have come back with are not anywhere near what is needed to address the mega crisis that COVID has presented to the world.
Yeah. Well, as we're going to wrap up soon, Harris, could you perhaps, I mean, this is the more difficult question, right? That what do we do about it? What can the public, activists, other organizations, people listening to this podcast, it's such a big problem. It's a global situation we're facing. But just for a light at the end of the tunnel, what would you, as Harris, say? Yeah, let's do to make things better.
Yeah, that's a hard question, of course.
Yeah, you know. I know.
I think that there are some important things we can do. Is first, in our daily lives, be very sensitive to the realities of the level of death and destruction, which has ratcheted up in the last 18 months.
Yeah.
We cannot just pretend it's going to disappear.
Yeah.
It is a significant new reality of global life, and particular where vaccine nationalism in some countries is essentially protecting the populations of those countries as against other peoples around the world. Mm-hmm. This tension is going to get stronger. So as a personal matter, the more we highlight that we are all share a common humanity and a common human rights set of values, we can work to identify and respond to that kind of abject disregard for human life.
Yeah.
From activists in the northern countries, it's a very important, as your interview is in questions are saying, is to get out there and say the pharmaceutical market should not be a market. Healthcare is a human right, and we need to move toward breaking that public misperception. In developing countries, is to develop other public health measures, which largely the northern countries are discounting, but distancing, selective closures, ways of engaging public health ways, routes, and being able to have the technology for healthcare that is developed anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think we should be focusing on the fact that a global crisis requires global responses, and a global crisis means that we have to step beyond our normal expectations of how business as usual, diplomacy as usual, power relations as usual are going on.
Human life is sacred. There's no amount of profit that can justify letting people die just to protect your bottom line. There is no industry that is more valuable than life itself. The COVID-19 pandemic will not go away soon, and it's very likely that it is only the first in a series of health threats to our vastly interconnected world. How we choose to solve the problems today will have an impact on how we will approach similar crises in the future. This is the State of Power podcast from the Transnational Institute. Thank you for listening this far. Many thanks to our guest, sociologist Harris Glackman, speaking on the limitations of COVAX. Harris has written a full report on the subject, the result of a collaboration between Friends of the Earth International and the Transnational Institute. You can find a link to it in the podcast description. TNI's material is all free, but we would greatly appreciate your help to keep doing the work we do. If you'd like to find out more about how you can boost TNI's work, please click on the Support TNI tab on our website, tni.org. If you have specific questions, requests, or suggestions for the podcast, please send an email to podcast@tni.org. You can also find us on social media at Transnational Institute on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.